Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson. And joining me on today's program is author Robert Berger. Robert's new sci-fi novel, The Divine Theory of Everything, Book 1, The Wanderer, was published by Lumina Press and has just recently hit shelves. And he is here today to talk about what led him to write his book, some of the interesting creation versus evolution questions the story asks, and his future plans for a series. Let me tell you a little bit about Robert. Robert Berger was born in April 1963 and spent most of his life traveling the world. Following his father's 22-year military career, Robert served in the U.S. Navy for 7. And when Robert left the military, he went into the telecommunications industry, where he is now a respected principal engineer. Today, he lives in Anna, Texas, with his children and granddaughter. He is an engineer who deeply believes in God, yet feels torn between science and religion. Someday he hopes to know the real theory of everything. And Robert's book website, where you can find out more about him, his books, and his thoughts, are at thedivinetheoryofeverything.com. So that said, thank you so much for joining us today, Robert.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having this interview.
You bet. I understand that the original idea for this book actually came 2 years ago when you were on board a military submarine somewhere deep in the ocean. Is that true?
Yeah, seems like another life for me. I spent about 7 years in the Navy, and 4 years of it was aboard a fast-tech submarine out of Charleston, South Carolina.
So many hours deep in the sea.
Yes, we spent lots of time at sea. I mean, the longest time we were at sea was 94 days straight, and it was extremely stressful. But reading books and breaking away from the monotony of the job and the stress is very valuable to us.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did the idea for your book, The Divine Theory of Everything, actually come from that experience?
Well, when I was in high school, I never really was a very big reader, and it was on one of those long sea voyages that a friend of mine had given me some books about an alternate world. It was the book was Thomas Covenant, The Chronicles of Thomas Covenant by Stephen R. Donaldson. And the more I read into the book, the more I realized that, to me, I wanted to be a writer, and I wanted to write about my parallel world. later, as my career developed, I started to read more about science and the specific aspects of the possibilities of parallel universes, and how close science was to theorizing that there is such a thing as, or at least the possibility of parallel universes. And that's really what kind of drove me to finishing the book and pressing forward with the first book, which is The Divine Theory of Everything, the book one, The Wanderer.
And so you were actually, I thought you had more of a science background and interest, but it sounds like before getting into the sciences, you were more into spiritual and mystical?
Yeah, I was. It was very fascinating to me, basically the mysteries of the world. And even before I got into the military, I followed a very religious background. And it always seemed to be a conflict between science and religion. And then the more I became an engineer, the conflict grew and grew. And that's really when I started digging into where is the common ground between the two.
It's a very big subject to take on for a first novel.
Yes, it is. It's very challenging, I have to say. It kind of kept me going. The thought of possibly sending out a message. But the most mostly it was fun. It was an interesting aspect that drove my curiosity, and the more I dug into it, the broader the subject seemed to get, and the more it fascinated me.
Well, I imagine this is why this book is actually going to encompass a whole series, because one book just would not do it.
No, it's and it's difficult to find a good place to break in a book, but you eventually have to find a place where you can, you know, go on to the next piece. I believe that it's going to be a very lengthy process of detailing my character's travels through the two different worlds, and basically come to that final outcome. An outcome that I think that a lot of people will be very interested in.
Well, absolutely. And so the character you're talking about is Stephen Morgan. And so there are some similarities to him and your personal life. So tell us about the connection and how much you've infused yourself into this main character.
Well, my Stephen Morgan, he was also in the Navy. Of course, I was in the Navy also. And he did evolve into being an engineer. And the reason I kind of walked down that particular path is because, for me, it's so much easier to write about your own experiences in life. And even though I'm not talking about myself in the actual book, I draw upon those life experiences to get into what actually happens when a person talks to somebody else or experiences a certain aspect. You know, the troubles that we have in life with marriage and family, and that whole piece, I wanted to come from deep within me, and that was the way I was able to express the troubles that he had and the struggles that my Stephen Morgan will go through as he travels through the two different worlds.
I understand, or I hear that a lot from authors, that one of their keys to successful writing is really to write about what you know.
It is, and your own experiences. And, you know, I know some authors, you know, they do a lot of study, and from that study they can, and then collaborate and build a world or some type of a novel that they can project. But to me, it has to come from the passion, has to come from within you. And you have to touch on a subject and experiences that you've actually lived through, and that brings forward that personal aspect to your reader.
And especially when you have some really deep messages that you're wanting to convey to your audience.
Yes, I feel drawn to make those messages, and I'm happy that a lot of my friends who have read this seem to make that connection themselves and you know, found some enjoyment in that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual storyline, and then I want you to get into some of these deeper messages, the creation versus evolution, and you know, how you go into that in the book. So actually tell us what happens with Stephen in this book.
In this particular book, Stephen Morgan is just a normal person living his life. Yeah. He's gone through a separation and a divorce. He has children, and he cares for his wife or his ex-wife still, but at the same time he struggles with not being able to live with her and not being able to see with his children anymore or be with his children anymore. From that beginning, Stephen Morgan gets drawn into a different world. He gets chosen to fulfill a task at the end. Now, of course, the task that he has to fulfill remains hidden from him throughout the book, but the whole purpose behind keeping it hidden from him is because he needs to live through each of these experiences before he can make that choice at the end. And as he travels through, basically since he's drawn into this other world, he immediately makes a connection with religion, God, and Satan, and how they want him to fulfill this final prophecy, but mostly he starts pulling upon his experiences in life and his religious background as he works through these different challenges. It's one task after another until he reaches a final conclusion, and in each place he's looking to achieve a balance, not to basically thwart one over the other. Life as we know it is a balance between good and bad. I mean, we try to strive to be good, but at the same time, we struggle daily with things that are evil. And how do we deal with those pieces? And I'm not trying to say in the book that it's okay to have evil, but the nature of our world and the life that we live is there will be good aspects and there will be evil aspects. And as an individual, we have to find a way to deal with those, to come to an impasse where we have to live with the evil, but continue to strive for what we believe is good.
It's interesting, the mix of choice versus destiny. And I don't even know if versus is the right word, but just the way that you're blending those two subjects together.
Well, I agree, and that destiny is a fixed plan. I mean, those people who firmly believe in God and religion will focus on a divine plan. There is a plan for every person in this world as we go forward, but life will continue to draw you away from that plan, and it's up to us to make the right choice to continue to go forward toward the ultimate goal. But the reality is that we make a choice, and every time we make a choice, we either go toward the light or we go away from it. And sometimes we have to find that middle ground. Sometimes we fail and follow a lesser path. But still, there'll become another choice which will guide us toward where we ultimately want to be.
Do you think truly that choice towards good is always obvious?
No, it's not. As a matter of fact, typically it's hidden. And at the point that we're making that decision, we don't know what is the right way to go. And it's only the next step we take after that that tells us, did we choose right or did we not? And it's the experiences that we get up to that point that will help us pick which should be the right or wrong. Now, we make mistakes. We're human, right? So we may choose the wrong path. It's recognizing that we've chosen the right path the next time we make that decision, or the next time we make a decision, so that we re-steer us back to where we're supposed to go.
Sounds like you almost have to stumble to get on the right path.
You do, and that's exactly what Stephen Morgan does throughout this whole trip, or throughout this whole journey, is he stumbles along in an unknown environment to him and works his way through it. He pulls on his own experiences from life in the world of science and continues to push his way through. At the same time, though, he's drawn by the other characters in the book who have already lived or are living in the world of magic, and they're trying to draw him into their conflicts for their specific aspects. But even as he walks through this world of science, he looks at the different people, and where one side may be calling the other evil, and the other evil side is calling the other evil, they both have the same aspects of good and evil, and they're doing things right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And who's to say which one is the one that should prevail over the other? And that's really where he gets into this constant the discovery of who he's dealing with and where they're at in their evolution of their own path toward their divine destiny, and how he can help them get back on the right path, not necessarily choosing one right over the other right.
That's so interesting. Do you think the addition of magic and mysticism in this book will it all turn off some of the more religious readers?
It will. And if a truly devout religious person was reading this, a theologist or something, they would probably dismiss it. But that's not the audience that I'm writing this to. The audience that I'm writing this to is the growing generation who does believe that there is alternate universes out there, and that those alternate universes operate differently than ours, which is really in the physics and science and stuff, and the possibility of otherworldly aspects, spiritual and magical, and the fact that they are not necessarily evil just because we don't see them in our life every day, and it's their desire to understand those other aspects of our world and the possibilities of other worlds that draws them into these books of fantasy and science fiction and super technology that gives them a lot of entertainment. And so I provide that entertainment, but at the same time I'm trying to get across these messages that there is a religious aspect and we still have an ultimate goal in life, a divine destiny that we need to be reaching for.
So this book is considered fantasy sci-fi. Are you satisfied with that genre distinction?
I am. I always thought that when I started, like I said, I started with the fantasy aspect. That's the type of books I read. And but being a religious person myself, I always thought that wasn't being very religious, right? Because they do talk about evil and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But mm-hmm. what they express in those books is the struggle between good and evil. And I always liked to understand the struggle between good and evil. And when I really got committed to writing a book or writing and publishing something, it was an event that drove me that. And it did not come from either religion or fantasy or the books I read in. It was actually in my science career where I started learning some pieces and I started listening to different people talk, and that told me that I wanted to send a message to other people in that area. Specifically, it is the theory of everything. There is a huge growing environment in the science world where we are searching for to understand our universe. I mean, there's the Big Bang, right, and the string theory and the M theory, and all those science paths are starting to come together, and one is now reinforcing the other. It was in some recent shows that I saw by Stephen Hawking that really kind of inspired me. There are some people in science, obviously they're more in the technical side, that struggle with religion. And on some extremes, they doubt whether there's really any value in still believing in God. A specific quote from one of the science channels, The Masters of the Universe, with Stephen Hawking and the Theory of Everything, he actually asked, can we now see where we came from and where we are going? And he implied, and even asked it, do we still need a God, right? Mm. Being is that God, when religion came forward, was a moral struggle that people needed because we didn't understand the world we were in, and we needed that religion to continue moving us together as a civilization. Now that we're beyond that and we understand more about our universe, science is saying that there may not still be a value in God. And what I'm trying to bring into that message is that we still need that piece. And I thought about, going back to your original question, I thought about writing a technical paper and publishing it with some of the conclusions that I had come to as an average, ordinary person, looking at both theology and science at the same time. But I couldn't seem to grasp or get that passion that I wanted to in the message, like I was talking about earlier. You have to have those experiences, mm-hmm. and you have to put that into your writing. And although it was a very passionate subject for me, it was hard for me to get that out in a technical aspect.
In a nonfiction, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And really inspire people to read it, right?
Right.
And specifically, the audience that I want to read it is those people who deal in the mystical and the magical environment and are seeing science and how do we bring all those together with religion. So anyway, that's why I picked that genre of science fiction, so that I could show somebody struggling in a pretty much a make-believe world and how they made those connections and those decisions to drive them toward a divine destiny, the same divine destiny that we all struggle with in our real lives. And I just found that very fascinating.
It sounds like it can also fit into this new sort of budding genre of spiritual fiction, where you really follow a journey of a character that's going through some sort of spiritual unfoldment.
I agree. I mean, I've been reading in some of those myself. I see commercials every day about the Truth, which is Scientology.org, right?
Mm.
I find that there's a melding in some of those messages between, spiritualism and science and where we should be going as a civilization. And if you build on if you try to build a factual, real study, a nonfiction book, what you turn into is more of a conflict, right? People begin to try to either pick apart what you're doing or embrace it. And to me, that only adds to the ultimate confusion that mm-hmm. people go to mm-hmm. as to whether or not there's a divine plan or not. And what I'm trying to do is make it an entertainment, right, where people don't feel that they have to pick it apart. It's make-believe. It's a world of fiction. And all you're trying to do is relay a message. Now, they may not agree with that message, but they're not going to, it's not going to be as adversarial by simple fact that it is just a fictional book, and what you're trying to get with that fiction is a message.
And I think it really taps into a different part of the brain. A more creative process will happen when you're reading an actual story as opposed to just factual and theory and the nonfiction version.
I have to agree that I definitely enjoy reading fiction.
Yeah.
Much more than I like reading tech books.
Yeah.
I read a lot of tech books.
I bet you do.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Robert Berger, author of The Divine Theory of Everything, and you can find out more through Robert's website, thedivinetheoryofeverything.com. Well, I'm wondering, obviously you still feel that there is a strong relevancy for the whole creation versus evolution debate in today's society, which is very different, and it is changing so quickly, and people are really concerned with a lot of, you know, other things that are just in their day-to-day environment. You still feel that this is still a very relevant subject?
I do, and there is a strengthening conflict at this moment, and I'm trying to portray in the book that we really don't have to look at it as a conflict, because what we have here is just two sides of the same coin. Looking at it from a religious aspect, we all believe that the world was created, or the Bible teaches us that the world was created, and I believe that the Bible is correct. And that creation, if you follow that timeline back, was 6,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that really doesn't play out very well when science, which has been digging so hard into how old the Earth is, and they can scientifically prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the world has been here for millions of years, right? Billions of years for the solar system, and even 13 billion years for the universe itself. I mean, there's irrefutable evidence, scientific evidence, that says that, hey, we've been around for a long time. It didn't all happen 6,000 years ago. From a religious aspect, though, it's all faith-based. And, you know, I've struggled with some of my more strong science people that I deal with. And they say, well, I need to have more than just faith. I need to have some proof, right?
Because logically that does not make sense.
It doesn't, exactly. I can't just arbitrarily believe when there's so much evidence that tells me that really can't happen. Well, the theory behind the actual science behind this fiction goes into an aspect that I believe from a science perspective they've overlooked. And if you look at the Big Bang Theory today, the theory that most scientists have come up with is that the world or the universe began with a very small point and a huge explosion in every direction. For the longest time, physics would not go beyond that actual explosion, that Big Bang, they call it. That piece made science an easy target for theologists who said that the world was created. And since physics, which is everything that we know in science, breaks down at that moment, they said, hey, your theory is full of holes, right? So it was only recent developments in the last 15, 20 years that started going beyond that, and that's where string theory, and that's a very difficult subject to talk to for most people, but each atom, as we know it, is not an individual speck, but it's a string that continues to flow throughout the universe, and it can, on a quantum basis, appear anywhere in our universe, but it's the same atom. So not getting too much into the technical, because I definitely try to avoid that in my book,
mm-hmm.
that this theory now allowed science to go beyond that Big Bang, which is the singularity, and really strengthened the argument behind evolution, a real evolution of both the universe, the Earth, and mankind as a whole, versus some type of a creation aspect, which is a divine presence such as God stepped in and said, let there be light, or, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. So those instantaneous aspects now became an evolution, and science now had a very strong position to argue back against theology, which is strictly just belief, right? You have to believe.
Yes.
So when I started exploring this myself, I realized that there's an aspect of this that I believe that science has not properly embraced. and that one of those dimensions, as we call them, in their each string being a dimension in itself, is time. I mean, the first three dimensions are very simple for us. It's left and right, up and down, in and out, which is a three-dimensional world that we live in. But the fourth dimension is time, and that is we move forward in time. Now, for us, humans, right, we only move in time and have no control over our movement in time as we are today. But a lot of the theories from Einstein theorized that time travel could flow differently under certain circumstances. People traveling in space, time might travel slower for them, and we've been able to prove that scientifically by having people in space and measuring their concept of time versus the concept of time for the rest of us living on the Earth. So because he theorizes time can travel differently, and all the physics that we have today doesn't say that time cannot flow backwards, right? I believe that at the moment of singularity, with enough of energy, singularity being the Big Bang, there was enough energy there to make time go in both directions, where we go forward, which that's the side of time that we're on, but time can also go backward, and everything that creates a mountain or fills an ocean, all those things would work backward from the moment of creation. So the very moment when God said, let there be light, then whatever it took to put light on the earth, right, from a sun, would then ripple backward through time until that light can then be shown on the earth. So if there had to be some gases form in the universe, and there had to be gravity, and that gravity then formed into a sun, and then that sun evolved orbiting planets such as Mars, Mercury, and Earth itself, then all those things would happen as time rippled back from the Big Bang, so that at that very moment, there was light shining on the Earth.
So what you're saying then is that middle point or that still point was actually 6,000 years ago?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the Big Bang that scientists are looking at, now we're looking backward in time. Sure, it looks like that Big Bang is at the very far side of the 13 billion years that they see. But in reality, because the Big Bang is an explosion in every direction, that moment, that actual singularity, that Big Bang, could have happened anywhere in that from 13 billion years ago until today. That moment that there was an explosion in every direction could have happened 6,000 years ago. It could have happened 10,000 years ago. But the fact that it could have happened 6,000 years ago adds to a complement between science and religion. Now, they are, like I said, two sides of the same coin. We're looking at one side from science, and science is looking at we're looking at one side from religion, and science is looking at from the other side of the Big Bang, right, where we created the world, or not we didn't, God created the world, and that's what we're living in.
So interesting. So how does the actual theory of your divine theory of everything tie into that?
So you mean from the book perspective?
Yeah, and basically, I mean, you're sort of presenting a new theory here.
I am.
Yes.
In a non-fictional format, but
sure,
there is a science behind that. So if you look at most of the books that get written today, they are built upon some type of belief that something, you know, has changed, right? Or how we would like to envision the world, right? I'm going to go back to your question in just a second, but I just wanted to touch on something.
Mm-hmm.
The science, if you look at the theory, the show Star Trek, right? In Star Trek, they discuss what they call warp travel. Now, we know in the real world and in science, right, that you can't go any faster than the speed of light. The closer you get to the speed of light, the more energy and the denser your, or the less dense your object has to be to reach that speed, right? And we know that that's pretty much a speed limit is the speed of light. Now, science has just recently realized that there's no speed limit on space itself. So if I fold space before my object and expand space on the other side of my object, I can get that object to travel now faster than the speed of light. But when those books were written about Star Trek and the movies were written about Star Trek, there was no understanding of warp theory or what those possibilities are. But it's our imagination that brings us into that, and that science fiction story that brings us toward that scientific conclusion that maybe we can actually travel faster than the speed of light. So when I'm writing this book of science fiction, I am introducing a different theory, one that has some scientific background and some religious background, but it brings the two together. And getting back to your original question, you were saying, how does that theory apply to my book? Well, that is one of those personal struggles that Stephen Morgan has always worked with. He himself has struggled with his religious background from his family and his life, but at the same time, his training and his understanding of knowledge and his chosen career has pretty much butted heads the more he digs into science and technology. And he's had a hard time reconciling that. Well, because of this task that he's been chosen to give, he's given extra knowledge, right, of the universe and its working. And that knowledge helps him to understand that the world could have been created by the fact that time flows in both directions. He now understands that there is a possibility, and from that possibility, there's basically our entire universe grew out of, and now the world as we know it could very well have been created, and science and religion now go hand in hand.
So fascinating, Robert. I mean, you really explain these complex topics so simply and understandably, and I know that that this, you really carry this through into your book too. This is not a complicated read.
No, as a matter of fact, a lot of the friends, my friends, you know, have read it, and colleagues, you know, seem to say that this, you know, this clicks for them. It's just
yeah.
You know, it's a very simple idea that they can get their hands around and actually help them in their own personal lives, which is the message I'm trying to get across.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the sort of emphasis that we've been seeing in recent years about quantum physics has kind of been the bridge to bringing these subjects and this topic sort of into the mainstream?
It is. And the more we seek understanding of our environment, which we as humans are, our curiosity is extremely powerful, and we will continue to strive to understand our world, the more we try to understand, the more we feel the struggle of how life actually evolved and got to where it is and how complex it is. And we want to understand what it is, but we're afraid that understanding will lead us away from years and years of religious understanding and belief, and it kind of leaves us lost, right? The more we understand about where we're at, the less likely it seems that everything that we've believed in, all of our struggles through life and our family struggles and humanity as a whole, what are we actually coming to? How how can we reconcile these two pieces together?
Do you think we'll ever really know?
No. I believe that it will be a an eye-opener once we die.
Yeah, there you go.
And that is too late.
That's the final chapter right there. Well, how many books will be in this series?
Well, I'm putting together two trilogies. So the first three books is what I'm working on right now, and then it'll follow up by another three. And the main character will go back and forth between good and evil. And in some aspects in the book, it's going to seem like he's doing the wrong thing because maybe he made some wrong choices, right? Or he's trying to create this balance, and the only way he can is to travel a dark road for a little while to get to that ultimate goal. So it's going to take time, and it's going to take what I view to be about six books to complete what I believe is the ultimate message I want to get across.
I know that some reviewers are saying that your first book here actually has a pretty abrupt ending, but obviously there's a purpose for it, and there is a continuation with book two, which you're, I think, going to be putting out early in the new year.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
I believe my first book, it took me a long time to actually put it together because I kept switching back and forth. But the second book has flowed from me so smoothly. I believe that I'll have it completed before the end of this year. And what my intention is to put it into the publisher. And I suspect that process will take, 2 to 3 months to get it edited and then get it fully published.
So a spring 2010 release.
Yes.
Fantastic.
That's what I'm saying.
Great.
And it does have an abrupt ending, but I got a bunch of feedback when I had actually written the majority of this first three trilogies over the last 10 or 15 years. Like I was describing, I was was in the Navy, and after I got out of the Navy, I actually started writing down some of these ideas and putting them together in a cohesive type of plot, right? And in doing that, I started learning about some science, and again, that added to those aspects. But when I was ready to start putting the first book out, I started really putting all those thoughts together into a real journey for my character. And in doing that, I had the first three books pretty much all written as an outline and structure all put together. But when I went to my publisher and I told him, I said, well, I'm still, going through this. I haven't really gotten through where I want to be in the next book. And I sent it to the publisher, and they said, well, you're at 341 pages, which is about right for a book, right? If you go too much more, because this is print on demand, you're going to be adding to the cost, and you'll eventually hit a point where your reader can't afford to get that book initially, and you won't get the same presence that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it was that seemed like an abrupt ending, but it leaves if I hadn't made it right there, I wouldn't have had another place to break it again for another 200-300 pages. And the publisher, then the book wouldn't become affordable. I hate to say it was kind of, I guess, a financial decision in there, but not really a financial decision for myself. It was for the audience that I'm trying to capture. I didn't want to make the book too expensive for them.
And it will make sense when they read book two and it's a continuation. And I think the fact that you are putting out the second installment so quickly, I think readers will look past that if they do feel that it's too abrupt.
I think they will, too. And I really think that they'll enjoy where I take the book the next time. And the next place where I break it is very understandable as to why you break there. My character switches back to the world of science. And that is a logical place to break it.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking at our time, Robert, and we have just filled up our spot today.
I see.
And so I wanted to make sure we got in a mention of your website again. It's thedivinetheoryofeverything.com. And I just want to open up the last minute here for final thoughts from you. I did have a question that I didn't get to slip in, and you might want to touch on it briefly, and it's about the hidden picture of on the cover art. So maybe you want to go there. But just speak to our audience for some final thoughts.
Well, first of all, I really wanted to thank you and for this interview and this opportunity to share with your readers or your listeners. And I wanted to describe that basically the whole flow of my book is just, it just seems to pour out of me and comes down into the pages. And I actually did the artwork for the cover of my book also.
Oh, wow.
And if you look at the artwork, it's just a bunch of squiggly lines, which is string theory, right? And that's what I was trying to express, is all these little squiggly lines, and there are two globes that are pretty much mirror images of themselves, right? If you look at them, it's the globe and the sun shines on them basically from an opposite perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, it just seemed strange that after I had created that mirror image, my son came back to me and pointed out, he said, "Dad, you've got the face of a snake embedded in there. And if you look at the very center of the orange picture, the orange blob, then as you come out from that picture, you'll see the outline of a snake as it has its mouth open with the fangs hanging down and comes up into the eyes and everything at the very top of the picture." It just seems so strange that picture formed without any creation of my own, and it matches right in with the idea behind the book, and that is that evil, which is represented in the Bible by a serpent, is there to draw upon the two worlds in us away from the divine plan, and it was just so strange to me that something like that would appear. And what I believe, as I write into my book, is that the message that I'm trying to get out will also appear to the readers just naturally as I explain my experiences and how my character works through the struggles between good and evil in the book.
So a little divine intervention there with the cover art?
Exactly.
That's great. Well, you can tell then. I mean, this, it sounds like this message is very inspired for you. And so it is coming through to you so easily. And so it doesn't surprise me that there are messages like that. And you know, that it's just interesting, very interesting. I love that story.
Yeah.
Well, you are well on your way to putting out a really fantastic series, Robert, and I'm so glad we had a chance to get you on the program and really kick off the first book, which is getting such great reviews and really is just some very interesting subject matter. And so thank you so much for joining us today, and I look forward to it again. I'm sure when you come out with book two, we will do this again in the spring.
Well, I like I said, I want to thank you also, and I hope that I don't sound too much like a fanatic as I go through my beliefs in religion, and I hope that the audience, your audience, understands that really this is just a work of entertainment. It is supposed to be something that's enjoyable and gives you some inspiration on how to deal with your normal life.
Oh, wonderful. And it really makes you think, and people need that level of intelligence in their fiction. So you've done a great job. Thank you so much, Robert.
Well, thank you.
Take care. All right, listeners, great interview with Robert Berger today. His new book, The Divine Theory of Everything, book one in his series, and it's called Wanderer, is out now. And you can find out more through Robert's website, thedivinetheoryofeverything.com. I know that the book is available through Amazon, can be ordered through local booksellers. It may even be on your local bookstore bookshelf. So do have a look for it. And I'm glad that you had a chance to tune into our show today on Inside Scoop Live. It's been a really interesting, fascinating, thought-provoking interview with Robert today. So thanks again. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.